Ziggy Love on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. This is what you will hear on today's program. Andrew Smith tells about how some students in public schools are struggling to catch up after the COVID-19 pandemic. Then, John Russell and Ashley Thompson tell how exercise is the most promising tool against the bad effects of aging. After that, Kelly Jean Kelly tells about the presidency of Barack Obama in our America's Presidents series. But first, this story on Cuban refugees coming to America from Brian Lynn.
American immigration officials report a sharp increase during the past year of Cubans fleeing their country for the United States. Border protection officials say they stopped Cuban migrants trying to enter from Mexico almost 155,000 times from January to July, the Associated Press reports. Most of the migrants fly to Nicaragua as tourists and then slowly make their way to the U.S. border. Many enter the states of Texas and Arizona. A smaller number attempt trips across the ocean. The U.S. Coast Guard reports it seized more than 4,600 Cubans from last October to this month. Most of the migrants caught are released with orders to appear in immigration court or report to immigration officials. It is the largest migration of Cuban exiles since the Mariel boat lift in 1980, when nearly 125,000 Cubans came to the U.S. over a six-month period. The latest increase is fueled by Cuba's severe economic situation. The country's economy has been hit hard by U.S. sanctions and slowdowns linked to the COVID-19 pandemic. Large demonstrations in Cuba last year led to widespread arrests and fear of increased political oppression. As a result, a growing number of Cubans began to flee. In November, fleeing became easier when Nicaragua stopped requiring visas for Cubans. Reporters from the AP recently spoke with three men who shared their experiences fleeing Cuba. Two of the individuals did not want to be named because they fear for the safety of family members still on the island. One of the men is Rolando Jose Cisneros Boroto of Camagüey, a city in central Cuba. The 42-year-old street seller said he was tired of going hungry. He said he decided to leave his wife and three children in hopes of finding more profitable work in the U.S. He sold all his belongings and collected $13,000 for the trip. After taking six flights, he finally arrived in Nicaragua in June. From there, he traveled on land through Honduras and Guatemala to Mexico. While hiding from Mexican police, Barroto said he spent days drinking water from a river and eating only grass. He finally crossed into the U.S. south of Del Rio, Texas, and surrendered to Border Patrol officials. He was released after 3 days of detention and now lives in Algona, Iowa, where a cousin offered him a room in his house and food. The trip lasted 36 days. "I never thought it would take so much work to arrive," Barroto told the AP. "What one goes through along the way, I do not advise anyone, but Cubans prefer to die on the way before staying in Cuba." One of the other men told the AP he was jailed in Cuba for taking part in protests in July 2021. When he was temporarily freed to wait for a sentencing decision, he decided to flee. Unemployed, he asked his father, who lives in Texas, for about $15,000 to pay smugglers to help him escape. First, he traveled 400 kilometers to Ciego de Avila, a city in the center of the island. From there, a bus took him and 30 other passengers about 100 kilometers where a boat was waiting. Among the migrants were a pregnant woman and a 7-year-old boy. The group passed through the Bahamas and, after 12 hours, arrived in the Florida Keys. A Cuban friend met him and took him to a house. The third man built a raft out of aluminum tubes to carry him and 3 friends. The group left from a fishing port west of Havana in May 2021. With no GPS, the man said they used stars to navigate. After 22 hours, the group reached South Florida. "The first thing one thinks of is leaving, that either we all die of hunger little by little, or we make an attempt," the man told the AP. "I knew I could die in the water, but I needed to take the risk," he said. The man is now seeking asylum and hoping to bring his wife and 3 teenage daughters to join him in the U.S. I'm Brian Lynn.
Many young students spent much of the 2020-2021 school year learning from home. But some educators estimate that students who spent the most time learning remotely lost about half a school year of learning. In first and second grade, children are 6 to 8 years old. That age is a crucial time for learning to read. But many first and second graders who spent time learning remotely fell behind in reading ability. Now in third grade, many of those students are reading below expectations for their grade level. Third grade also is an important year. That is because students must master basic reading skills. After third grade, learning math, science, and social studies requires reading comprehension. Research suggests that if students do not have this comprehension by the end of third grade, they are more likely to struggle or even to stop going to school. John King Jr. is a former U.S. Secretary of Education. Of children who fell behind, he said, "Those kids are very vulnerable." He questioned whether such children were getting all they needed. If not, there's the risk of a lost generation of students. Public schools in the city of Atlanta have taken steps to try to make up for that lost learning. The school day is now 30 minutes longer, and students who are behind attend small group tutoring during that time. Atlanta schools also increased availability of summer school. Superintendent for Atlanta Public Schools, Lisa Herring, said one of the best things to do to improve student performance is to have time with the students. Malaysia Thomas is a student in Atlanta. The 8-year-old attends small group tutoring for reading and math. She told the Associated Press, "It's fun, but there are all these big words I can't read." Her mother, Diamond Anderson, said that she has seen Malaysia improve, and Anderson is thankful for any extra help. Other American cities are providing additional services to try to help students who are behind. New York created an after-school program to provide tutoring for students with special needs. And city officials say they plan to reduce class sizes at some schools. Boston is using a new way to teach children to read. The city's schools have increased summer school and are using an online tutoring company for students to use at home. But many parents are not using the new services. Thomas Kane is an economist at Harvard University near Boston. He has studied the effect of the pandemic on student learning. He said he does not think most school districts have a realistic idea of what they need to do to make up for lost learning. He estimates Atlanta's students lost a total of 18 weeks of instruction in math and 12 weeks in reading between March 2020 and June 2021. But Atlanta's longer school day and summer school gives students a little less than 6 weeks of additional learning. Kane said that the school year should be 4 to 5 weeks longer for 2 years. But he admits that idea is not popular. Drew Thomas is another student in Atlanta who has attended small group tutoring. But her mother has no plans to stop paying for a private tutor to help Drew learn. Drew's mother said, "I just can't let her fall behind." I'm Andrew Smith.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
You have heard about Cuban refugees fleeing to the United States and students trying to catch up after the COVID-19 pandemic. Next, learn about the good effects of exercise on aging, and then our America's President series program about Barack Obama.
More scientists are exploring cellular senescence, a state in which cells no longer divide. Senescent cells, which build up in older bodies, have a link to age-related conditions such as dementia and cardiovascular disease. Scientists are exploring drugs that target senescent cells. But the most promising tool against the negative effects of senescent cells, experts say, is exercise.
Viviana Perez Montes of the National Institutes of Health described cellular senescence as a very hot topic. The Associated Press reports that about 11,500 projects involving cellular senescence have begun since 1985. The AP report was based on its study of an NIH research database. A large number of the projects began in recent years, the report said. Such research is built upon the idea that cells stop dividing and enter a senescent state in reaction to damage. The body expels most of these cells. But others remain in the body. They can harm nearby cells, says Mayo Clinic's Nathan LeBrasseur. He compared it to the way one bad fruit can ruin a container full of fruit. But scientists wonder, can the unhealthy buildup of senescent cells be stopped? The ability to understand aging is truly the greatest opportunity we have had, maybe in history, to transform human health, LeBrasseur says. Extending the healthy years affects quality of life and public health, he said. The number of people 65 or older is expected to double around the world by 2050. Although no one thinks senescence holds the key to extremely long life, Tufts University researcher Christopher Wiley hopes for a day when fewer people suffer like his grandfather did before death. He had Alzheimer's disease. I'm not looking for the fountain of youth, Wiley says. I'm looking for the fountain of not being sick when I'm older.
About 100 companies, plus academic groups, are exploring drugs to target senescent cells. Scientists are careful to note that cell senescence can be useful. The process probably developed, at least in part, to suppress the development of cancer. Cell senescence happens throughout our lives, caused by things like DNA damage and the shortening of telomeres, structures that protect the ends of chromosomes. Senescent cells play a role in wound healing, embryonic development, and childbirth. But problems can come up when senescent cells build up. When you are young, your immune system is able to recognize these senescent cells and eliminate them, says Perez, who studies cell biology and aging. But when we start getting old, in Perez's words, the activity of our immune system also gets diminished, so we're losing the capacity to eliminate them. Experimental drugs designed to clear senescent cells have been called senolytics. In mice, they have been shown to be effective at delaying, preventing or easing several age-related disorders. At least 12 clinical trials with senolytics are now testing whether the drugs can help control Alzheimer's, improve skeletal health, and more. There is still much to learn.
Today, Le Brasseur, who directs a center on aging at Mayo, says exercise is the most promising tool that we have for good health in late life, and its power extends to ourselves. Research suggests exercise counters the buildup of senescent cells, helping the immune system clear them and fight the molecular damage that can affect the senescence process. Last year, Le Brasseur led a study that provided the first evidence in humans that exercise substantially affected the process. It reduced signs in the bloodstream of the effects of senescent cells in the body. After a 12-week exercise program, researchers found that older adults had decreased signs of senescence and improved muscle strength, physical ability, and reported health. A recently published research review collects even more evidence in animals and humans for exercise as a senescence-targeting therapy. While such studies are not well known outside scientific circles, many older adults connect exercise with youthfulness. Rancher Mike Gale, 81, put in a track and field throwing circle on his large property in California. He and some of his friends throw the discus and use other exercise equipment. "I'd like to be competing in my 90s," Gale says. "Why not?" 95-year-old Richard Soller says exercise keeps him fit enough to deal with what comes his way, including the discovery that his wife of 62 years had developed Alzheimer's. The two sometimes walk the streets of their neighborhood together, holding hands. "Do as much as you can," he says. "That should be the goal for anyone to stay healthy." I'm John Russell.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. Presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Barack Obama. He first took office in 2009 and was re-elected in 2012. Because his presidency is so recent, this program will not try to offer a historical perspective. But one part of his legacy is already clear. Obama is the United States' first African-American president. His father was a black man from Kenya. His mother was a white American from the Midwestern state of Kansas. For many Americans, Obama's presidency was an important symbol in a country that permitted black people to be enslaved. And even after the U.S. Constitution officially banned slavery in 1865, African Americans have been extremely underrepresented in the U.S. government. By 2009, only 5 African Americans had ever served in the U.S. Senate, and Obama was one of them. Even many people who did not vote for Obama said his election to the country's highest office made them proud or hopeful.
A public opinion survey immediately after Election Day found that 2/3 of Americans believed that the country's racial conflicts could be resolved. Obama's parents met as students at the University of Hawaii. His father had won a scholarship to study economics. His mother went on to earn a degree in math there, as well as a graduate degree. The two married and had a son, whom they named after his father, Barack Hussein Obama, Jr. But the couple soon separated. The older Barack Obama returned to Kenya, where he later died in a car accident. Barack's mother went on to marry another man. He was from Indonesia. The family moved to Jakarta, and the couple had a daughter named Maya. When Barack was 10, his mother sent him back to Hawaii to live with her parents. She wanted him to get a good education. Barack finished high school in Hawaii, then went on to Occidental College in Los Angeles. After 2 years, he transferred to Columbia University in New York. There, he completed a degree in political science. But Obama said the best education he received was in one of his first jobs. He worked as a community organizer in Chicago. He helped people who lived in public housing put pressure on the city government to improve their conditions. Obama later said the work showed him how important it was to understand the legal process. So he entered Harvard Law School. Over the next years, Obama worked as a lawyer, wrote a book about his experience as a person of mixed race, and married Michelle Robinson, a woman he worked with at a law firm. She and Barack Obama settled in Chicago and had 2 daughters, Malia and Sasha. When he was in his mid-30s, Obama began his political career. He was elected 3 times to the Illinois State Senate. After 10 years there, he won a seat in the U.S. Senate in a landslide victory. That same year, Obama attended the Democratic National Convention, the meeting where the party officially nominates a presidential candidate. Obama was not one of the candidates, but the Democrats asked him to make an important speech. In it, Obama famously talked about how his life story was an American story. He said he was confident the U.S. could overcome its divisions and achieve unity. "There is not a liberal America and a conservative America," he said. "There's not a black America and white America and Latino America and Asian America. There's a United States of America." Only 4 years later, Obama would be elected its 44th president. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
That's our program for today. I'm Mario Ritter, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. Join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.